Audiobook of Sowers of Life of C.R.P. Wells. Translated from Osamdors Davida. This is extracts. Numbers suddenly mentioned in this text reading may be page numbers. The events that will be discussed in this book are not an isolated case of an extraterrestrial encounter, nor the most important within the world phenomenology, but they are the only ones in the history of humanity that have given concrete evidence of their objective truth. Four times the presence of journalists, TV channels and investigators of various origins were allowed to participate in the experiments of programmed and pre-arranged contact. The news of the first encounters that took place in 1974, experienced by myself together with a group of friends, and that later involved journalists, researchers and people from various countries, were made known to the world for the first time by the then journalist and foreign affairs correspondent for the Gaceta del Norte of Bilbao, Spain, Mr. Juan José Benítez López. Saturday, November 17th dawned with a delicious sunshine and a wonderful blue sky. In the morning, we analyzed the events of the previous night and agreed that the extraterrestrials' presence and support were there. We silently watched all that commotion and a single thought struck our minds simultaneously like lightning: what if they don't come? What if nothing happens? What shall we do? What will they think of us? Sixto and I rushed to Carlos, questioning him and complaining of the attitude of his group of visitors. He said he couldn't help it. We were both very annoyed and angry about it all. My father did not seem to notice our disapproval and asked what time the encounter would occur. Sixto, visibly angry, said it would be at any moment as we had already had the confirmation of the event. No sooner had he spoken than a shout drew our attention. Before us, from behind the mountain, slowly came an object of spectacular proportions. It was a dark-colored spaceship, about 100 to 150 meters long, cylinder-shaped. White lights that lit in sequence could be seen along the fuselage. The spaceship swayed slowly and silently. My father could hardly believe what was in front of him. He had devoted years to the investigation of this phenomenon and hoped someday to meet these beings, but he had thought that day would never come, moreover not via his children. Everybody was dumbfounded and followed the flight of a spaceship in the sky. Isolated comments could be heard in the silence of the night. Emotion was strong. Something gripped me, tightened my chest and silenced my voice. I was paralyzed, unable to utter any sound, just staring, stunned, at that solid cylinder floating in the air. Suddenly, one of the women present cried with trepidation, "There, over the mountains, I can see two discs." We all turned towards that direction. In fact, two disc-shaped objects, 20 to 25 meters in diameter, flew over the neighboring mountains, giving off bluish light that for a few seconds changed to orange. Then, the two objects flew apart, speeding independently towards the group that screamed hysterically. One of the spaceships flew towards the crowd at great speed. People ran, stumbled and fell to the ground, beer bottles rolled and broke, tables and chairs turned over, some people ran to the cars, others tried to hide. At the same time, three more objects were seen on the horizon, but they stayed at a long distance, making quick movements at sharp angles. And as quickly as they had appeared, they disappeared, maneuvering endlessly as they went, and the group could hardly follow their flight as far as the mountains. The two other spaceships reacted suddenly as if under a synchronized command, speeding towards the sea where they split up, one to the north and the other to the south. The biggest one, still in the area, came back for a last approach. It emitted a strong hum, turned round and sped southward. After the last movements of lights, there was complete silence. People were stunned and could hardly believe what they had seen. Frozen in place, we had witnessed the final maneuvers of that fantastic spaceship. Now, moved by the same impulse, the people approached our group. They looked at us, puzzled. We were responsible for an amazing extraterrestrial show, for an encounter where two civilizations of different origins were able to face each other consciously. Science fiction died at that moment and gave place to an absurdly different reality in all our lives. And everybody, without exception, asked, "How is it possible? How can it be so easy?" We did not have the answer. After all, we did not understand the mechanism that established the communication. The purpose of the encounter escaped us, and everything occurred as an avalanche of questions, experiences and emotions we could hardly assimilate. Little by little, the people calmed down and started heading home. Puzzled at what had just happened, they could not stop commenting on the maneuvers of the objects. Still literally dizzy from the spectacular night show, my father did not notice how disappointed we were. The picnic of the alleged researchers was a sample of what we might expect from the rest of the world. When all the visitors had gone, we climbed to the top of a hill. There we stayed the whole night, looking at the sky, gazing at the stars, trying to solve their mystery, and wondering what would come next. We knew nothing about the future. We could guess nothing. In that silent desert emptiness, we meditated for hours, while the stars continued on their trek in the sky and the constellations gave way to dawn. With the first rays of the sun, we left for home. The world would never be the same for us. We ourselves would never be the same. Chapter 7. The extraterrestrial guides. In the days that followed the encounter, the experience at Chilka was always the main subject of our conversation, and not only between Sixto and me. We could not help talking about that fantastic event in conversations with my parents and friends. It had been too amazing to just sideline it. But although we were glad that there had been other witnesses, we were a little disappointed, perhaps frustrated, by their behavior. Time is a good healer. As the days passed, we learned that the extraterrestrials were willing to establish closer contact and identify the ones in the group that were able to effect communication. The communication developed with growing fluency and new subjects were explored. Sixto, Juan, I and several others who had taken part in the event in February were included in the task of investigation. From the day of the experience with the members of the Institute, we had met regularly with the intention of finding out more about our alien visitors and the mechanisms that facilitated the contact and reception of messages. I particularly craved to establish communication and was looking forward to the day I could personally ask my own questions. But all my attempts had failed up till then. In an answer received by my brother, Oakhook mentioned that 80% of the effort in the communication came from them and only 20% from us. According to him, man had not yet reached a level of mental and spiritual harmony balanced enough to develop his paranormal potential. He also said that the human brain gives off waves similar to radio waves, but that due to cultural, intellectual and educational aspects, these waves are manifested in very unstable frequencies. That was why it was so difficult to tune in. He also said it would require using an amount of physical and mental energy that man does not usually have because he wastes it regularly and excessively in his daily activities, and ends up in a deficit balance. He explained that the telepathic relationship and its manifestations, mainly between identical and fraternal twins, couples, mothers and children, are due to the fact that there has been or still is a tie, be it intrauterine, embryonic or merely affectionate. It means that during pregnancy, with the mother carrying the fetus for 9 months, both brains establish a survival circuit between each other. The same happens between twins, either between each other or with their mother. Although the moment of birth breaks the tie, it is kept partially active through the ties of affection. It explains the intuition or sixth sense of mothers. Very strong love relationships can also establish a telepathic line between people of different origins. It is a consequence of close affinity, mutual satisfaction, dependence or full integration. It must also be remembered that in the course of human evolution, the paranormal faculties have mainly been linked with the survival instinct, their manifestations always associated with immediate or future dangers. The need for self-protection and safety triggers the psychic senses in an involuntary, unconscious way, using the small amount of energy that is left. According to Oakeshott, the sense is directly linked to the instinct of survival, such as sight, smell, touch, hearing and taste, are lost or weakened by modern man's lifestyle. During the evolutionary process of the species, they had found a moment of surpassing excellence, sophistication, but eventual substitution. Wise nature offers its creatures more and more complex tools to help them in their survival. The appearance of psychic faculties, proven by the successive manifestation of their phenomenology, shows the existence of these new mechanisms in action. They are here to play the same role as the previous ones, that is, to pinpoint, select or warn of the imminent or incidental dangers that threaten the immediate continuation of life. In short, we would say that the paranormal potential exists to help in the selective process of the species that reach more advanced levels, particularly those of intelligence. So the senses that would traditionally be employed to guarantee the mere perpetuation of a species are gradually overtaken or replaced by more accurate ones that will only be manifested in the more evolved individuals, who in their turn will transfer that inheritance to their descendants. At many different opportune times, Oakeshott emphasized, our humanity could have reached a higher level of paranormal development, but the process had been interrupted by the attitude of institutions that killed people, and even wiped out whole families, accused of witchcraft. When someone exhibited abnormal attributes, they were considered either saint or demon. The death of those individuals and the consequent destruction of their genetic charge delayed the rise of an era of paranormality, forcing the human race to slow their acquisition of this capacity. Our group was given the fundamentals on how to start the communication and how to establish, develop and maintain a circuit of mental relations with the extraterrestrials, which would eventually allow better information exchange. It is important to point out that the interest we all had in the contact channel was mere curiosity, nothing more serious, adventure only. Still, little by little, we were contacted. Rose, my younger sister, who was very sensitive for her age, dynamic, as curious and brave as the best of us, was the second person to make psychographic contact. A few weeks later, she contacted a female alien called Xenia, from the planet Tabu in the binary system of the stars Alpha and Beta in the constellation of Centaurus, the same stars that are part of the Southern Cross and are only 4.3 light years from our solar system, that is, only about 43 trillion kilometers away. Both stars turn round a common mass center in very long orbits, which means that their separation has an appreciable variation in a revolution period of approximately 80 years. Also part of the system, although a little further away from the other two stars, there is a third red dwarf star called Proximal Centaurus because of its shorter distance from our solar system. The name Apu originates from Quechua, a Peruvian Indian dialect as ancient as the megalithic constructions that remind us of the fantastic monuments of Incan civilizations. That name, meaning master, is directly associated with the legends from small villages in the Andes, where according to remote traditions, those beings manifested to the Indians as gods, angels or celestial beings, also called gentle, for their presence was related to the regular bestowal of some kind of assistance. The identification of these extraterrestrials by such a curious name was the result of a mutual agreement, for as they said, we would not be able to pronounce the real name of their world of origin. We were told that the beings from Apu originated from a civilization that had first come to the solar system more than 250 million years ago, escaping from a terrible destruction that led them to barbarism and extermination. We were also told that it had been an extremely difficult journey that had extracted great sacrifices and taken many generations till its conclusion. After their arrival in our solar system, they had first temporarily inhabited a planet, now extant, called Phaeton by the Russians. It means triumphal carriage and originally occupied a spot between the orbits of planets Mars and Jupiter, where the dangerous asteroid belt now is. There, They built a rudimentary colony where they worked undisturbed for some time, planning a more detailed exploration of our solar system, until the planet was destroyed by the collision with another celestial body in erratic trajectory, forcing them into a new migration towards the Earth. To reinforce this statement, there is scientific evidence that proves planetary collisions in our solar system. In 1986, the space probe Voyager compiled information about the inclination of the axis of the outer planets Uranus and Neptune. According to reports published in the Science Journal of July 4, 1986, a group of 40 scientists concluded that the moons of Uranus and Neptune were not formed from those planets, and according to scientist Ellis Miner, assistant to the project JPL, the colors of the satellites as well as the inclination of their orbits could only be the result of the collision of a very large object with one of their moons. Later, NASA scientists affirmed that an object almost as big as the Earth, traveling at over 60,000 km/h, might have caused the inclination. All this was confirmed by the English astronomer Gary Hunt from the Imperial College of London, who summarized his statement in only a few words: "Uranus received a great shock at the beginning." According to the research of Dr. Yevgeny Krinov from the Soviet Commission for the Study of Meteors from the ex-Soviet Union, in meteors that probably came from the asteroid belt, petrified unicellular hydrophytes were found, that is, fossilized vegetal material, as well as fragments of trilobites, an extinct kind of crustacean. According to Dr. Yevgeny, there is no doubt that in a very ancient past there was life on Phaeton long before it disintegrated. Another Soviet scientist, Dr. Alexander Zavaritsky, who investigated the asteroid belt very closely, said that planet Phaeton used to occupy the fourth place in the solar system, that it had a structure very similar to the Earth, and that it was approximately the size of Mars. According to the collected fragments, it was clear to the researchers that the extant body had oceans, mountains, and an atmosphere able to sustain life. According to the scientist, a bigger cosmic catastrophe must have drastically altered the configuration of the solar system, placing each planet in an orbit different from their original one. In the messages sent by the extraterrestrials, they said that long before the destruction of their planet, the ancestors of the Apus had looked for a refuge on Earth, where they lived for a period of millions of years, during which time they built a fantastic, unique civilization that was at length destroyed by the fight against other extraterrestrials, beings from Mars who desperately fought for the possession of the planet Earth. Of course, all this had occurred because of the destruction that Mars had undergone after its orbit had been changed by the bombardment of big asteroids hurled out from the disintegration of Phaeton. All this fantastic information, senseless to some, found great support in the text of many religions, among them the Jewish and the Christian, and in countless archaeological findings. The need to know whether we were receiving correct information from the extraterrestrials forced us to investigate intensely and with great curiosity. The results were astonishing. For example, the Jewish religion informs us that the beginning of creation was the result of the action of Elohim and not God directly. Elohim is a plural word mentioned 2,250 times that means supernatural powers or celestial hierarchy. In the texts of the Torah, the sacred book of the Jews, the creation of the world and the whole universe is attributed to them. They are considered God's helpers. In Christianity, it is said that in heaven, before the creation of man, there was a fight between celestial hierarchies. As a result, some angels fell onto the earth. This story was reinforced by the finding in the caves of Qumran near the Dead Sea, of almost 1,000 scrolls written in Hebrew, Aramaic and Greek, containing ancient texts of the Torah, the basic book of the Catholic Old Testament. Among them there was one with the title Regulation for the War between the Children of Light and the Children of Darkness, obviously a reference to the celestial conflict. In Egypt, there is an inscription on the walls of the Great Temple of Edfir, an ancient sacred town dedicated to the god Horus, that tells us of the war between the god Horus and his enemies. According to the legend, Horus had installed in the earth the foundry of heavenly iron where he kept the solar disk that traversed the skies. The text reveals that it occurred in a time previous to man's existence. Horus traveled beside God Ra, always in a winged disk going through the heavens. But in this case, they both got together to fight against beings that wanted the luminous crown that meant supremacy over the earth. 4,000 years ago, the Assyrians and the Sumerians believed that the god Baal had created the world from the body of a monster that he had previously killed in a battle. According to Hinduism, which began 5,000 years ago, creation was the work of various gods. In short, many religions refer to two important moments in the world: first, the beginning when there were only gods; second, the creation of man. In many cultures there are also references to extremely advanced civilizations that existed in ancient times and then disappeared, such as Lemuria and the lost continent of Mu, both vanishing in the Pacific Ocean after a great catastrophe, the first mentioned in Theosophical tradition and the second in several cultures in India. The lost continent of Kauai of the Polynesians, and Heva near Easter Island, also disappeared in the Pacific. The legendary Aztlan of the Aztec, the Atlatlan or Azatlan of the Norhoa, the Toyan of the Maya, the Hyborian of the Nordic, the Tainohalik of the Welsh, the Lioness of the Frank, the Thule of the Scandinavian, and even the Atlantis of Plato. There is strong evidence to prove that in ancient times, probably millions of years ago, the surface of this small planet Earth changed a lot. So it should not seem strange that places that once were on the surface are now on the bottom of the sea. It is known that at least in these last 18,000 years, the level of the sea varied over more than 100 meters, which places many archaeological sites at great depths in submarine abysses. But not only the sea can hide archaeological deposits, the surface of the planet itself can also hide great secrets. We should remember the findings of whole towns such as Herculaneum and Pompeii buried by meant freedom. In case of survival, the captive would always return to the arena. Even so, why does the need for survival remain? Because, under all circumstances, there is still the flame of life. Hope. So, failing to understand the true meaning of life, man chooses to abandon it and live the present moment in search of a slow death. A fictitious, worthless present, where he will try to fill every vacant moment with excuses in the endless depressing hours, minutes and seconds of the life. Thus he will not have time to worry about tomorrow, about whether there will be another day, or whether it will be worse than today. Unfortunately, this slow, gradual suicide occurs with the approval of his conscience, fully disguising and postponing the final result. It is sad to think that the only energy that motivates him to go on living and delaying death is the faint hope that someday, perhaps tomorrow, magically everything will be different. According to the guides, man is not an evil creature, he is simply ignorant and an arrogant subject. Afraid to face his cultural failure and to admit his error in the construction of an incorrect lifestyle, feeling unable to begin again, he became anthropocentric and thus more easily found reasons to justify his errors. This situation limits him and takes him farther from the right track. Pretentiously, he believes that he is the center of the universe, that he knows all secrets and is able to unravel all of them. In this way, he makes his journey more difficult, because if everybody thinks as egotistically as he, nobody will listen to anybody. Each person will be alone, translating the enigmas of the world and trying to find his own meaning for life. There is only one way to rescue man from this sidetrack, and that is to reform and begin everything again. Anta looked fixedly at each one of us and said, "Now you know what the future of your world may be like. There are no fixed dates for it. It may occur in 10 or 30 years, but sooner or later this future will come to be. You may be ready or not, but you can change it. It is up to you to think and decide if you want to take part in a task that can procure better life for humanity. We are here to help you achieve that. If man evolves, he will be able to take the experience of a life full of realizations to other worlds." But if he continues killing, spoiling his own home, the only thing he can offer is the irresponsibility of endangering other worlds and the menace of chaos and degradation because of this egotism. Any information that we could offer man now would only serve his purpose of exploiting his fellow man and repressing the weak or the ones who would block his way towards the expansion of his privilege. So, we have come to offer you the opportunity to join us in this task. Preservation of universal order will be your objective. If you accept, we will provide the necessary training. If not, if you think it will be too much responsibility, we will leave you and will not come back. We will look for other human beings who will be willing to help us. Think it over, you must give us an answer in a week. After some time, Anta said, soon, with all the new technology, man will reach distant worlds. He will soon be landing on the other planets of his solar system and will obviously find us. We are not interested in promoting any nation or benefiting any great power. At present, the only thing the human being can bring to our civilization is egotism, ambition, chaos and a bereft spirit. Man is not ready to face civilizations like ours. The amount of knowledge that we have can be fatal to your world. So, it is important to us to start your preparation. If that confrontation must happen before your destruction, it is fundamental that the confrontation should benefit both sides. If you accept our proposal, you will help it come true. You will be one more link between our worlds. After that, Amta accompanied us to the entrance hatch and we left the spaceship. I must confess we were overwhelmed and puzzled. The extraterrestrial's words echoed in our minds endlessly, rolling and rumbling like thunder. We saw the spaceship take off quickly and silently speed towards the stars. In a few seconds it became a small dot of light lost in the vastness of the cosmic ocean. The silence of the desert added to our bewilderment. We kept gazing at the stars. A light breeze blew on our faces and the chill of the night brought us back to the world. During the car trip to Lima, we could hardly utter a word. We could not get the encounter, the information and mainly the proposal out of our minds. The following week was a difficult one. We felt that we had reached a turning point. We could not lose the opportunity of giving such important meaning to our lives as the one shown us by the guides. Our group would have the incredible chance to receive an orientation from a civilization at least a few thousand years ahead of ours and to revise together the process of formation that has led humanity to where it is now. We would learn and understand in detail the mysteries of our origin and what happened on the path of our evolution. With no religious, esoteric, mystical, political or cultural ties to interfere and no ideological compromise to limit us, our minds would be free to learn and understand everything that they would be willing to give. However, in order to achieve it, we would need to acquire at least the basic important philosophical and social knowledge of our present world in order to compare it with the extraterrestrial's world. Only in this way could we identify and recognize where and when man took the wrong track, and learn which the right way back was. We had to make a quick decision. The lives of millions of people in the whole world might change because of it. The guides had made it clear that all this work was part of an experimental project. A project that aimed at giving man new hope to re-encounter and restart on the path of coherent evolution. The way that would allow man to find the lost, true pleasure of life. A new, productive, constructive, healthy, authentic life would be discovered again. That June became a month full of adventures in the history of our lives. July promised a lot of experience, achievement and probably an ever-ending headache. Chapter 9. The Rama Man. July began very busily, full of emotion and happenings. The contact experiences we had gone through would ignite the envy of any science fiction writer or the passion of an Isaac Asimov. However, we needed to promptly decide what position we would assume. Anta's words still roared in our minds. Some of the extraterrestrials' observations had touched us deeply. You have the opportunity to consolidate marvelous future and guarantee an age of great accomplishments. Up to this moment, we have accompanied you and given evidence of our peaceful intentions. We want you to help your people to attain your collective freedom and conquer the limitations that imprison you inside yourselves, stopping you from seeing what there is all around.